So I have four nieces and nephews, and I was talking to my sister about IXL. And IXL Learning is this fun online program for kids, and it covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. My sister and my nephew love it. The way it works is it's powered by AI, so IXL gives the right help to each kid, and IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Maybe you've been looking into private tutoring, but it's out of the budget, or this is a big school year for your kiddo. So make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Ologies listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/ologies. So visit IXL.com/ologies to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hey, Fidelity, how can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Episode 5. You're here. First off, thanks for listening. I see your reviews. I read them. I thank you. If you're just hopping by on occasion, just popping in. No commitment. You can consider subscribing. That'll get you episodes right into your pocket area. And if you wish that you had an Ologies shirt or tote or iPhone case or mug or clothes for your child, even though we swear on this podcast, ologiesmerch.com now has things there. And thanks, Shannon Feltis and Bonnie Dutch, as always, for helping me do that. Okay. Horology. What is it? I know what you think it is or what you wish it were, but it's not the study of
your moms.
Wow. I did not say that. Siri said that. It's very inappropriate. Okay. Horology comes from the Greek for hora. Aura, meaning hour or time. Now, a horologist is someone who studies the measurement or the instruments of measurement of time. But in common parlance, horology now kind of refers to mechanical timekeeping. So if you're like, is there a rift between mechanical and electronic timekeeping? Well, whew, let's just say that was some foreshadowing for you. Okay, so prepare to learn how many goddamn tiny pieces are used to make an old school mechanical watch, and how expensive watches can get, and how much coffee watchmakers drink, and what would happen if you scared one, and the history of timekeeping. There's so much information in this. You're never going to look at your watch again quite the same. So I found this horologist by Googling horologist plus Los Angeles. Just took a stab. And I came across a few articles about this one dude in GQ, LA Times, and I was shocked to see a photo of him, and he appeared to be under 100 years old, which was odd for a horologist. He looks like a California type who has definitely surfed at least once, and he may have had a short ponytail. Honestly, I don't remember because there was a dog in the office, and I got so excited, I got distracted. I can't remember. Anyway, horologist. I needed to know his deal. So I drove to a business park south of the airport to sit down in the break room of the Weiss Watch Company, an LA-based, handmade, old-school, but also new-school mechanical watch company. And I asked this nice man a million questions. Please enjoy professional horologist Cameron Weiss. Weiss? Is it Weiss?
I say Weiss.
Okay. Cameron has owned the Weiss Watch Company for 4 years.
How did you start a watch company? I mean, because you're a young person. You're like, what, like under, you're in your 30s, right?
20s? Not yet.
Here's where I awkwardly try to ascertain Cameron's age. Because listen, in my defense, he looks young as hell. He has that kind of Southern California guy look, but he carries himself and he speaks like a tweed-clad professor. It's very confusing.
You're in your 20s.
Yeah, 29.
How did you start a watch company in your 20s? How did you do that?
I was fortunate to find watchmaking pretty young.
How did you get obsessed with horology and clocks? What was like the first thing? Do you remember cracking open a watch when you were like five and being like, what's happening in here?
I don't know about the first thing, but pretty early on, I was given a cheap little plastic watch. I think it had alligators on it or something, but it was just, it was when I was a little kid and I really enjoyed wearing it. Something about it, it just felt nice to have it on my wrist. And that was the beginning.
I needed a visual of this. And so I searched for alligators plus kids watches, and I didn't turn up anything. And then I realized, what if it was a crocodile? And then I realized, what if it was a clock-o-dial? And then I got bummed and overwhelmed, because clock-o-dial is such a good idea. I'd have to quit my whole life. I'd have to pursue that as a children's watch company. But I was relieved. Whew, there's already a kid's book of that name. Somebody's on it. Good job. I can continue with my life as planned. Anyway, from the alligator watch, Cameron became interested in stopwatches.
Then I found my way into a watchmaking school.
So Cameron went to school. He did that for 2 years, full time.
Was able to train in Switzerland as well.
Whoa. I did not ask him about the landscape or chocolate, and I regret that.
And eventually I was confident enough to start my own brand.
How old were you when you started going to watchmaking school? Were you the youngest person there? Because I feel like I've met a couple horologists and they're all like 70. Are you always the youngest when you go to meetups?
Oh yeah, at meetups, definitely.
Yeah.
In school, I wasn't the youngest.
Okay.
But it's more so because there's very few people who are actually admitted into schools.
How rigorous is it? Do you have to have great eyesight and like not shaky hands?
Yeah, that along with a couple of certain learning styles, being able to focus for long periods of time.
Okay.
Maybe you sit there for 8 hours working on bending one little piece of metal into a certain shape or filing something perfectly flat. Being able to focus and keep your patience is very important. So things like that. The teachers kind of weed out people who wouldn't be able to handle that.
So they're like, no spazzes, no dicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Essentially.
Exactly. That's a major time investment.
Yeah.
To teach someone watchmaking. So they don't want to teach it to someone who might not actually succeed in the program.
Right. They're like, go do something else.
Yeah.
They're like, fix pinball machines, be a bartender. I imagine it's a very quiet classroom also.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah.
Because if you go up behind a horologist and you startle them while they're working on these movements, like you will get stabbed, I feel like.
Yeah, it's not a good idea. And tweezers and screwdrivers are very sharp.
Okay, so watch movements are tiny, right? But are you also interested in clocks? Or are you more interested in wristwatches and pocket watches and smaller items?
Personally, I'm interested in anything mechanical that keeps time, really.
Mm-hmm.
For the business, we only make wristwatches.
Right.
And I don't do any kind of clock making. It's a completely different craft.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Your watches, they're all mechanical and not quartz, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So can you explain the difference between a mechanical watch and a quartz watch?
Yeah. Mechanical watches are powered by springs.
Mm-hmm.
And they can either be wound by hand by turning the crown. Or they could be wound by a weight in the back of the watch that actually moves with your arm movements.
Mm-hmm.
A quartz watch is battery powered. So you actually have a battery that is then putting energy through a quartz crystal.
Okay.
The crystal oscillates back and forth.
And that's why it's a quartz watch.
Yeah.
How do you feel about lyrics that reference watches? I didn't know that with a mechanical watch, wearing it winds it until like I heard a Jay-Z lyric about it.
Yeah.
I need to give a special thank you to the website Rap Genius, which is now just called Genius. I liked it better when it was Rap Genius. But this site will explain all of your I don't know what this lyric is or what it means problems. So if you remember, I'll set the scene. 2011, a Jay-Z Kanye West song comes out. There's a line, Jay-Z says, ball so hard, got a broke clock, rollies that don't tick-tock. Art of Mars, that's losing time. I'm not good at rapping. And so on Rap Genius, I found out that having a broke clock and rollies that don't tick-tock means two things. Number one, you ball so hard, you don't even have time to wear your watches because automatic watches of the mechanical variety wind themselves just by wearing them. So he has so many nice watches that they don't even work because he doesn't even wear them enough. And when you have a rollie that doesn't tick-tock, that's good. That means the hand sweeps and it's authentic, unlike a tick-tock, tick-tock quartz imitation Rolex. So how does Cameron feel about rap lyrics? Does he love them as much as I do?
I mean, it's something that doesn't really appeal to me.
Okay, all right. Moving on.
How do you feel about watches being kind of, not status symbols, but like jewelry as well as something functional? Like, which part of it appeals to you, the functionality or the style of it?
I mean, that brings me back to why I chose watches mm-hmm. in the first place to be my interest kind of was you have this artwork and it's the mechanical movement, which has this whole watchmaking background behind it, all the history that goes into it, all the mechanics. It's like a work of art. Mm-hmm. Then you put it inside of the watch case and you can actually carry that piece of art on your wrist and it functions too. So it's like a little motor mm-hmm. that is encased on your wrist. You can bring it anywhere. Not like your Mercedes or your car, which you park outside and you can't bring it inside. Mm-hmm. So the wristwatch to me appeals for both those reasons, the mechanics and the art.
And just for the record, I don't have a Mercedes. But if I did, I also would not bring it in the building.
Exactly.
My like 2007 Prius is not something I can bring in. So it's the art and the functionality of it. How many parts are there in a wristwatch? Like roughly, like, can you describe how it works? Super, super basic for...
Yeah, you have... So you have two springs. You have a main spring, which is in the barrel, which is where we store the power.
Okay.
So instead of having a battery, you have the main spring. And that, once it's been wound either by your hand, the movement of your hand, or by physically turning the crown, mm-hmm. it stores the energy, and then it goes through a gear train. Okay. At the end of the gear train, there's an escapement.
What's an escapement?
The escapement, the easiest way to explain it is if you think about a pendulum on a clock, mm-hmm. it swings back and forth. Well, the escapement in a watch is the same thing, except it's just been designed to fit in a watch.
Oh, so it's
so it's a
tiny.
Coiled spring.
Okay, all right.
So you have these two opposing springs. One stores the energy, one releases the energy in a certain fashion where we know exactly how slowly it releases the energy, and we harness that to actually translate it to the hands.
I'm going to explain this again really quick in non-horology terms. Number one, you wind that little knob. That knob coils up a mainspring that gets all tense, and it wants so badly to go boing. This is the mainspring in a mechanical watch. But it's in this little barrel kind of dish. It keeps it from doing that. The barrel transfers all that wound-up energy to a gear train, which is just a series of wheels with little notches or cogs. It's all very steampunk. And what stops those wheels from just spinning out all that potential energy at once is a thing called an escapement. And the escapement regulates how fast the watch goes. The escape wheel has these crazy notches that look like insane saw blades, and they lock and only let it turn a little bit at a time. Now, the escape wheel turning a little bit at a time makes a weighted balance wheel swing back and forth like a pendulum. That's regulated by another spring called a hairspring, and that makes the hands on the watch face tick off the moment until your death, or the next time you eat a hot dog, or whatever the future holds for you. Oh, also, together, the balance wheel and the hairspring are called an harmonic oscillator. I think that's cute. Did you know that to oscillate is to swing back and forth, but to osculate is to sloppy kiss? Isn't that gross?
How do you know if it's right? Like, do you have nightmares about springs not being the right tension?
No. I mean, everything is... It's traditional watchmaking. Mm-hmm. So it's been tested over time. What we make today is the same thing that was made 100 years ago.
Okay.
Okay, brief brief history of timekeeping devices. 1500 BC, sundials. 1300 BC, water clocks. So water would drip, and that would fill something that would show you how much time has passed. 800, candle clocks. You'd burn a candle. Depending on how tall the candle was, you knew what time it was. There were also incense clocks. Burn some incense. When a different smell would hit you, you'd be like, oh, it's time for me to go to work. In 1500, spring-driven clocks became a thing. And then in 1656, thanks to Galileo, pendulum clocks were invented. And then from there, the latest technology was quartz clocks and atomic clocks. And atomic clocks rely on measuring the vibrations of certain atoms as their electrons vault around. And atomic clocks are by far the most accurate. They're so accurate, they won't lose a single second over the next, you ready for this? 15 billion years. You and I will not be around. When do we start caring about time for reals, for reals? Well, mid-1800s, so many places just had local times. There's like, let's say it's 2 o'clock around here. It didn't really matter what was happening a few hours away until we started hopping on trains. And then we needed to know, what time is this train going to be here? So in 1884, there was a Prime Meridian Conference in Washington, D.C. We were like, we're doing this. We're having time zones. Get your shit together, people. And so the world was divided into 24 different time zones. Everyone had a certain time. Everyone's like, get a watch. Come on, people. Be on time. So clocks had been around for a while, is what I'm trying to say.
So we don't really have nightmares because it's nothing new. It's like it's like if you're a painter. You know, everyone's been using paints for a long time. We're not trying some new fancy paint that might disappear in a day or two. It might fade or something like that. It's all traditional watchmaking. So there's great watchmakers that I borrow all of that engineering and physics and everything that they did. Mm-hmm. I borrow that and put it into our watches.
Were you good at physics and chemistry and sciences as a child? Or were you better at just like, I'm going to take the TV apart and put it back together before my parents come home?
Yeah, I have more of a mechanical mind, hands-on. If I can physically have something in front of me, take it apart.
How are you with like IKEA bookshelves?
I have no problem with IKEA stuff.
Okay.
All the stuff that goes into IKEA, the screws, the pegs, everything, they're way larger than watch parts.
Right. Okay, which brings me to watch parts. Roughly how many parts are in, you're wearing one of your watches, which is gorgeous, by the way. How many parts are in that mechanically?
In our watch, it's about 150 pieces.
Okay. 150 pieces. And yeah, they're all the size of what? Not a sesame seed. Like a, I don't even, like a piece of confetti. Like how big are these parts?
A lot of them are about the size of a grain of rice.
Oh my God. Some
of them are smaller. Some are bigger. It depends on which component.
And do you drink coffee?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
How do you not have shaky, like Captain Shaky Hands?
Well, I find that there's a certain amount of coffee.
Right.
And when you kind of get over that threshold, that's when you start to get shaky. Just the right amount of coffee is good.
Okay.
I have no problem with it. Keeps me awake, even if I'm sitting there at the bench quietly. But too much coffee and there's no more watchmaking. I move over and
start doing emails
and business stuff. Yeah.
How many coffees is it? Do you know? Is it like 2 espressos or like
No, it's more than that. Maybe 4 espressos.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
God, if I had 4 espressos, I'd just be like sweating and shaking. So the fact that you can even do that, that's amazing. So you had to learn that probably by trial and error.
Exactly.
Where you're like, Cameron, get away from the bench.
Yeah, this is too much. I can't watch make.
That brings me to a question. Is it harder to make a lady's watch because they're tinier parts?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So do they cost more because they're tinier parts? Tell me about this. Tell me everything.
That's the thing. They don't normally cost more.
Okay.
And there's actually a lot of vintage women's watches that were mechanical that watchmakers will not even repair today because they're so small.
Wow.
Yeah. They're very hard to find people to work on those watches.
Are a lot of watchmakers guys? Fixers? Horologists?
In Switzerland, it's not so much male dominated.
What is it about Switzerland? Why are they cornering the market on watches? Why are they so good at it?
They've been doing it a long time.
I never knew this, but during World War II, because Switzerland was neutral, that let their watch industry continue making consumer timekeeping things. Other nations of the world were like, if we're going to make an apparatus, it better bomb someone. The Swiss were like, I'm just going to keep making watches. So as a result, the Swiss watch industry had a pretty good monopoly. They were like, I'm just over here making watches, eating chocolate.
I can't function without a wristwatch. But how do you feel about the relationship a person has to time when they're wearing a clock face as opposed to, say, like a digital clock in their pocket?
It's almost like a crutch, I think, when people pull out their phones and they're like, you know, just sucked into their phone, checking Facebook, checking email. Whereas the watch is more of like bringing you back into the real world where you have a mechanical item that's on your wrist that it's real pieces. They move. There's a spring in there. You have to wind it every day or you have to move to keep it going.
Right.
So it's just, for me, it's a little more grounded in the real world than pulling out a phone and looking at that.
You know, it has nothing to do with watches, but it does have something to do with watches is punctuality. I live in Los Angeles, so everyone shows up like 4 hours late to things if they show up at all. Some people are punctual, some people aren't. I always run a few minutes behind, to be honest. I wanted to find out why this was, why essentially I'm a garbage person. So I Googled it. In 2001, Jeff Conte, a psych professor, ran a study. He separated participants into type A people who are ambitious and competitive and type B who are usually creative, they're explorative. Now, these are also known as tight asses and societal fuck-ups. Just kidding. And he asked these people to judge without clocks how long it took for 1 minute to go by. And type A people felt like a minute passed in about 58 seconds. So they were close. Type B participants thought a minute had passed after about 77 seconds. So clearly type B people are just on their own time. So give them that. But you know what? Either way, everyone was wrong. Everyone overestimated it. So, and also, what is time anyway? Time is a construct. Oh, man. This is the time in the episode where I ask about existential bullshit.
Do you have any, like, existential crises, like, working on watches about, like, time and, like, impermanence and mortality? And, like, does watchmaking ever factor into that psychologically for you?
The only time I ever think about anything like that is when I service watches, like watches that come back in, they have moving parts. So they all need cleaning and oiling just like a car engine.
Mm-hmm.
But realizing that at some point somebody is going to have this watch and I'll be long gone, but it'll need somebody to work on it, service it, or somebody will pull it out of a lockbox in 100 years and be like, wow, what's the story with this watch? But that's the only time I really think about not being around and, you know, these things lasting for so long.
Mm-hmm. When True Detective came out, did you get a lot of times a flat circle questions from your friends? Were you like, okay, guys?
I did not.
Okay. Do you ever think a lot about the time-space continuum and like whether or not time is a fourth dimension?
No, not really.
No.
Yeah.
Just, I had to check.
I think all I've done is just revealed that I have an anxiety disorder about mortality.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, here's the part where Cameron almost makes me start crying.
The previous generations actually were able to maintain mechanical watchmaking and kind of promote the art form behind it,
mm-hmm.
rather than just focusing on, well, it keeps time.
Right.
Because if you just focus on the time aspect, a quartz watch is far superior. It keeps better time, and it costs a lot less money. But a mechanical watch would be like the actual painting,
mm-hmm.
whereas the quartz watch would be the poster print.
Got it.
So the poster print is going to be very accurate. Colors won't fade. It'll be really nice and perfect, just like the last one. But the actual painting on canvas, that one is going to be unique. It's a real work of art. The artist may have had a slightly different brushstroke, or so that one has a more of an artistic appeal, almost like each one is unique.
Right. This is making me want to cry. That's like such a wonderful way of putting it. Like that makes every mechanical watch seem so much more emotional. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
when you consider that there's like a person behind it working on this who's gone through all this schooling, squinting, like looking at these tiny cogs.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty nuts. How do you even deal with those tiny tools?
It's a lot of repetition and training. Learning to look at things in a certain way, being able to see perfection is really important. And when you go to school, you actually spend about the first 6 months just learning how to see if your work is perfect or not. And by perfect, I mean like down to 20 times magnification. So learning to see any imperfection and then actually act on correcting it is a big part of learning how to work with everything, even just making sure your tools are perfect. That's the base for good watchmaking.
Is that part of your personality? Are you a perfectionist? Is your house like immaculate? Are your tax returns sparkling?
It does kind of become ingrained in everything you do. However, I do also enjoy working on cars. And the reason I like that is because if something doesn't fit, you can bang it with a hammer. If something's not, if something's not exactly perfect, it doesn't matter so much. So there's other parts of my life where I kind of relax a little bit and don't focus so much on the tiny little details that I focus on with watches.
Yeah, I'm sure cars just seem like these big, crazy, like working on a dinosaur, like doing surgery on a huge animal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's got to be so different.
Yeah. And all the parts are greasy and dirty and watchmaking is much cleaner.
When you decided to form your own company, Weiss, like what did you want to do differently?
Well, I truly believe that mechanical watches are very important because we don't need clocks or watches. We have that everywhere. The time telling part is not my main interest. Mm-hmm. The art behind it is so beautiful and the amount of work that goes into it is recognized. So for me, I wanted to take that and expose more people to it. I think there's a lot of people who they don't even really know about mechanical watches. They may have heard it, but they don't understand it. I'll show my watch to people and I'll tell them it's mechanical and then they'll see the movement and they'll still ask me, where's the battery?
Right. I think a lot of people are like, of course a watch is mechanical. And you're like, no, there's actually like taxonomic things. Like if it's a quartz watch, there's a battery. And, if it's a mechanical watch, it's all based on springs and tension and there's far more parts and more complexity to it.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like you're kind of like the Jack White of horology. There's something about mechanical watches that's very like akin to like, I appreciate hearing music on wax cylinders and vinyl and you know what I mean?
Very much so. Just like winding your watch every morning, it becomes this ritual. And because my watches have a display back, I always wind mine looking at the movement.
A display back is where if you flip over a mechanical watch, you can see the guts tick-tocking and working and clickety-clocketing and doing all of their horological magic. Now, I thought these were just glass backs, but I looked and no, oftentimes in really good watches, including Cameron's, they're not glass. They're made of polished sapphire crystal, which is hard as hell.
And I watch all the wheels turn and it's like maybe 30 seconds, but I do it every morning. Mm-hmm. And then when I look at my watch, I know that I've wound it and set it. And it's almost like this connection you have. Like if you had an animal and you feed it in the morning, you know, you're feeding your watch every morning.
Oh, that's an interesting way of looking at it. It's like kind of a 30 second mechanical meditation.
Yeah.
And I love that your watches have that display back. It's kind of like a Sleeping Beauty glass coffin where you can see inside.
Yeah.
Right. And was that like one of the first things that when you're like, when I have a watch company, it's going to be display backs all the way?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I want to show mechanical watchmaking to a lot more people, especially here in the US where we used to make a lot of watches. It used to be a major industry here. There used to be a lot of watchmakers. Around the early 1900s, it was a massive industry.
Right.
And you would actually meet watchmakers. But now I'm the only watchmaker that people meet usually. They're like, oh, I've never met a watchmaker. This is amazing. What does that mean? What do you do? How did you become a watchmaker? It's always interesting to talk to people.
So did you listen to like every drop of S-Town, that podcast about horology?
No, I did not.
Did you listen to any of it?
I have not yet.
Cameron!
I'm just going to bounce in here with a quick email update. I figured, okay, we recorded this a few months ago. He probably listened to it, so I'll get his reaction. I emailed the company. I got this back. Cameron still hasn't listened to S-Town, but I would estimate he's had about 70 people ask him thus far. Oops. End quote.
I'm just saying, just put it on your list. Do you listen to anything when you're watchmaking, or do you just need like the sound of silence?
Usually silence, but sometimes if I have a lot to get done, I'll turn on some music and that helps me sit at the bench for a longer period of time.
What kind of jams?
We already know he's not a huge fan of Jay-Z and Kanye.
Classical or just like old Carly Simon?
Sometimes when I polish, I'll listen to classical music if I'm at the polishing machine. But usually just a bunch of random mixes.
You're just like Pandora.
Anything. Yeah, play exactly.
Play me some hot jams.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of questions that people want to ask you. So okay. I'm going to fire them up. This is kind of like a speed round where I'm just going to lob a bunch of questions that people want me to ask you. Okay.
This podcast and my life is brought to you by Squarespace. Do you know that I didn't have a website for forever because I was putting it off because I was scared? And then I heard another podcast talk about Squarespace. I was like, I'm going to give it a shot. I had a website up that day. They have beautiful templates. They host. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Look at me. Even I did it. You can sell products. You can sell your time. They have this guided design system. It's called Squarespace Blueprint. You can select from a layout. There are styling options. You can get your website discovered with these integrated, optimized SEO tools so people find you when they Google. They also have easy to use payment tools. So checkout, very easy for customers, which is what you want. There's also Squarespace AI, which can help you explain what your site is about. You can choose your tone. Whether you're a scientist who wants to share your work with the world, whether you are starting up a business selling tiny paintings of tiny bugs, or a choreographer selling dance classes, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/ologies to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. I recommend it to all my friends, even when I'm not recording an ad. Okay. This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. And y'all know I have a little dog named Gremmy, which is short for Gremlin. And y'all helped me name her. And there's nothing that we like more than seeing her happy, which means tasty dog foods. And Merrick has been crafting high quality dog food for over 30 years. They were founded in Hereford, Texas, but Gremmy doesn't care about that. She cares about smushing her face in it and then licking the bowl. And I don't blame her because they use real ingredients and home-style recipes like real Texas beef and sweet potato or Grammy's pot pie. Grammy's like, Grammy's pot pie. Get away from it. It's mine. I also like that on the bag, they show what's in it. And they always use deboned meat, fish, or poultry as the number one ingredient. And I think Gremmy appreciates that. So check out Merrick online or in your local pet store and look for their new packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it. Yum, 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 yum. I know I usually save my secrets for the end of the episode, but I'm going to tell you my secret favorite candy. It's Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. It's really Reese's anything, but Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the thing that I'm like, have I had a bad day? I get these. Have I had a good day? I get these. Chocolate, salty peanut butter, the textures... I love everything about them. Also that there's two. So I'm like, oh, I get this one for later, which is 1 second later. Anyway, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, I love you. That's all. If you're me, you can shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you. Found wherever candy is sold. And I am. Oh, hi, it's me, the lady that checks a bunch of scholarly articles before she believes anything. Allie Ward. And I feel like we are similar in that we have a fair amount of skepticism and we like to dive deep and find out what the actual facts are. This is why when it comes to any kind of supplements, I enjoy Ritual, which is a female-founded B Corp, meaning that they're holding themselves accountable to not just the company, but also to the health of people in our planet. And their clinically backed Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin has these high-quality, traceable key ingredients in bioavailable forms that are clean. Only about 1% of supplement brands are USP verified, and Ritual is one of them. So I like being able to trust what I'm putting in my body. body. From an aesthetic standpoint, I'll also tell you that Ritual are beautiful little vitamins. They look like lava lamps and they taste like mint. So taking my Ritual is part of my, I guess, morning ritual. That's probably why they named it that and I didn't even think about it. Anyway, no more shady business. Ritual's essential for women 18 plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. So get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/ologies. You can start Ritual or add essential for women 18 plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/ologies for 25% off. Down the hatch.
Emily was like, did you listen to S-Town? Everyone wants to know if you listen to S-Town. Elspeth wants to know, what is your absolute favorite timepiece you've ever worked on? The rarest or your favorite that you've ever worked on?
The rarest that I've ever worked on was a Grand Complication from Audemars Piguet.
First off, Grand Complication sounds like a Wes Anderson movie. Is this an expensive watch? Well, it's not too bad. It retails for $996,000, but the good news is that I think there's free shipping.
They've utilized multiple complications in one watch.
Okay.
Split-second chronograph, perpetual calendar, minute repeater, and a lot of people, this won't mean anything to them.
I don't know what any of those mean. Now, a complication, is that like when there's a dial within the dial?
Well, there will be extra subdials because the more complex a watch is, the more it needs to tell you.
Okay.
The minute repeater, though, is what I like the most about it.
What is that?
So the minute repeater is, it's a chiming watch. So you actually pull a slide and then it will sound off the time.
Oh.
So kind of like a grandfather clock. Mm-hmm. It will actually repeat the time to you on demand.
How?
Down to the minute.
How does it do that? That seems like
it's all mechanical.
So it's a musical instrument also.
Exactly.
How big was this thing?
It certainly doesn't seem that big. It's still smaller than like a pocket watch.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So you got to work on that?
Yeah.
Were you so nervous?
Yeah.
How did you prep for it?
Well, there just wasn't any prepping for me. It was just a simple little fix on it.
I'm physically nauseous just thinking about
so
how much
that watch
that
has 1,500 pieces.
Go, God.
Yeah.
And they're all about the size of a grain of rice.
In that, because it's so complex, many of them are like an eighth the size of a grain of rice.
I can't even.
Tiny.
I don't understand how you're not, your palms aren't just like so sweaty. You can't even handle this stuff.
Just move slow.
Just
very
move slow.
Slow.
Okay. Lena wants to know, if you're a horologist, I love this question a lot. Do you feel like a total sellout if you want to buy a Fitbit or a smartwatch?
I would feel pretty weird wearing that.
Yeah.
It would be hard to tell people what I do all day if I had a Fitbit on my wrist.
Right.
Not to say there's anything wrong with it, but maybe on the other wrist and then a mechanical watch on one wrist with the Fitbit on the other.
Yeah, I feel like you'd have to get an ankle Fitbit or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Hide that under your pants.
Exactly.
You can't. Your wrist is good real estate.
Yeah.
It better be reserved for like a mechanical watch, maybe a med alert bracelet. But I don't think you could just like slap a Livestrong band on there and like a Fitbit. Okay. A few people asked, Britt wants to know, why some clocks click as seconds tick by, but others are silent.
So they all make noise. All of them.
Okay.
The difference is how loud.
Oh.
And it really just has to do with a couple of the components that actually knock into each other.
Oh, and they knock into each other?
Yeah.
On accident or on purpose?
On purpose.
Okay.
There's five noises that the mechanical watch will make. And that's actually how we time the mechanical watch and make sure that it is keeping time accurately.
Oh.
Because we know how many noises it should make in a set period of time based on the frequency of that escapement, mm-hmm. balance wheel and hairspring. What we'll do is we actually lengthen and shorten the spring, that hairspring in the watch.
Oh, got it. So that's how, if a watch is fast or slow, it would have something to do probably with the hairspring?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It would likely have something to do with your hairspring or some of the oils that are on the parts associated with the escapement.
Okay. You have to wash your hands before you use it probably, right? Or you get your grimy, dirty hand oils.
Yeah, definitely no touching the parts with your bare hands.
Oh, you just need, like, you need tiny tweezers.
Everything is only touched with tweezers. and small other little prodding type devices to move things around. We never touch the components with our bare hands.
Yeah, I guess there's like, you don't want pepperoni smudges on that thing.
Yeah, exactly. Cleanliness is very important when working with watches.
No one's eating lasagna at their desk.
No, definitely not.
God, can you imagine what a nightmare?
Yeah.
Oh, God. I
would not want to think about opening that watch up in 10 years and finding little bits of red sauce or something like that.
Oh, God, no. Okay, well, tell me what your last question, last two questions, like, what is your least favorite thing about what you do? And then we'll end on a positive note. You can tell me your favorite thing about what you do. But what's your least, like, what's the one thing that drives you crazy or that you didn't expect to encounter when you got into this field? Or questions that people ask you that are annoying?
Everything about the making of watches, I absolutely love. However, the business side sometimes gets in the way of that. Well, often gets in the way of that. And it kind of takes me away from why I got into this in the first place, which was to work on the watches. So I'd say my most favorite thing is developing something new and designing and kind of prototyping, testing something, making something that I haven't made before. That is very exciting to me.
So do you have a favorite moment that you've ever had doing what you do?
More so, something I didn't expect that would be really exciting is driving around and looking at the person next to us in the car and they're wearing a watch that I made.
Ah!
Something like that is really exciting. That just, it blows me away and it reminds me why I got into this, which was to expose more people to mechanical watches and try and restore an industry and just create this resurgence of watchmaking here in the U.S.
Do you ever roll down your window and you're like, bro, that's my watch?
I haven't in the car, but when I see people in person, I'll usually say, hey, I like your watch. And then I'll show them mine and I'll let them know that I made theirs.
Do they freak out?
Yeah, usually.
Yeah. I bet people want to hug you. I bet they're like, good job, bro. Or they give you like that back pat, that man back pat that means I respect you.
And sometimes I won't even notice. I'll be at a restaurant or something and I'll hear someone say, Cameron, is that you? And, you know, lo and behold, it's somebody that's got my watch. And
no way.
You know, they recognize me and...
You're like famous horologist over here. Thanks very much.
I never would have thought.
Well, where can people find you? Number one, what's the website for your company? And also, do you guys maintain like a social media presence so people can gawk at your wares?
Yeah. Our website is weisswatchcompany.com, and that's all spelled out. We also have Facebook and Instagram. And on Instagram and Facebook, we're oftentimes showing the workshop and how we make certain components, how we assemble something, new things we're working on. So for people who are really interested in watchmaking, they can kind of get an inside look at how watches are made.
And if someone wants to be a horologist?
Well,
start young, maybe. No.
So you don't have to find it young if you're interested. For me, it just so happens I found it young and it's a major passion of mine, so that's perfect for me.
So if you happen to own a Weiss watch and you see Cameron around, you should definitely high-five him. And if you're wondering how much his watches cost, which after writing up this episode, I was like, how much do these watches cost? They're not that bad. They're mechanical watches. They start at under $1,000. Some of them go to $7,000. But in terms of other watches, they're not like second mortgage level expensive watches. Really nice watches, I'm just going to say. If you're a horologiphile, horolophile, horophile. So I suppose it's time to wrap this up. Thank you guys for listening. Subscribe, rate, review, all those things. And thank you to everyone who is supporting on Patreon. You can support for as little as $1 a month, 25 cents an episode. And that gets you access to behind the scenes pictures. And you can also vote on questions for ologists first. So if you feel like doing that, go to patreon.com/ologies. And thank you everyone for making this possible by doing that. I heart you. Don't be afraid to ask smart people stupid questions before the bell tolls for us all. Next week, bugs. Entomology.
Pachydermatology. Homeology. Cryptozoology. Lithology. Nanotechnology. Meteorology.